Joining us now to talk about Evan Russell, Max Ferguson, and those Tennessee base Vols, the Oma Vols, as they're being called now, is Chris Burke. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Do you remember your walk-up song when you played at the University of Tennessee?
I had a few different versions of it. I think freshman year it was Thunderstruck. You know, get a little, you know, love a little, you know what I'm talking about? You know, you get, and then I think my junior year I had something hip-hop. I can't remember my sophomore year.
But, I love it.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest reasons.
You guys on that talk right now or something?
Yeah, well, we came back from break with London Bridge by Fergie, which, of course, was the sound that Max Ferguson had coming to the plate. I just think it's incredible, like, what's going through a pitcher's head when you hear Fergie come over the PA and, you know, Tennessee's best major league prospect at the plate is coming to the dish.
I think, like, that's the route I would go.
Get out of your game a little. I mean, it was Fergalicious before this, and now, like, it's London Bridge.
Like Barbie Girl or something. Something to really turn a screw loose.
I love it.
Yeah, a little mental game. I like it.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, we really appreciate the time joining us today. I want to start with last weekend's series against LSU for this Tennessee team. This team really, Chris, through the NCAA tournament has kind of displayed to me what they've done all season. They can win a lot of different types of ball games. And those two games really ended up working out pretty differently too, between Saturday and Sunday for the Vols in Knoxville. What stuck out to you the most, about Tennessee's performance against LSU?
I would say Chad Dallas in game one. You know, he was razor sharp after, you know, not a great regional showing, granted, against an extremely talented Wright State team. But I thought, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, you got to feel really good about the way Chad Dallas looked. And then, you know, the offense made enough plays, right? LSU helped them out. Tennessee capitalized. And then Sean Hundley came up clutch like he has all year long. So, you know, game one was not real eventful, but I think just in general, the start Chad Dallas gave them was what stood out to me. And then in game two, I just think they, you know, like I said a lot during the telecast, like, they just put their full talents on display offensively. I mean, it was a laser show and a power display that, you know, just not a lot of teams are capable of, but they had six home runs by five different players. So, and I just think in general, the Tennessee, like, I knew Rucker and Beck were going to have a big super because they played poorly the week before, right, at least from a production standpoint. You know, it's like, it's been that kind of year for Tennessee, right? If a guy struggles one weekend, they seem to be the hero the next. It just kind of feels like that for them. And there's just so much length in the lineup. When they're clicking like they were in game two, it's a pretty scary proposition for the opposing team.
Well, Chris, too, it's so interesting looking at Chad Dallas and the breakdown of the home runs he's given up, but also where he's given them up. Obviously, Lindsey Nelson Stadium is a smaller ballpark, and this time of year, it's a bandbox with how hot the weather can be and the wind kind of blowing out of the water out there. Chad Dallas has only given up four home runs away from Lindsey Nelson Stadium this season. How good can this guy be pitching in a much more cavernous ballpark in Omaha?
Well, I think the ballpark, you know, I'm sitting here watching on Pick BP right now. The ball's flying out pretty good. But it certainly is a much bigger ballpark than Lindsey Nelson currently is. And so I think if you see what you saw from him last weekend, he's going to do just fine. You know, when he can mix both his breaking balls, not only for strikes, but also get swing and miss chase out of the zones on those two offerings, then the fastball and sometimes the lack of fastball command doesn't play as much, right? The fastball has plenty on it. It just, you know, just misses more than he needs to with it. And that's where you've seen the majority of the home runs hit off of him. But boy, when he's got that cutter breaking ball combo going like he had last Saturday, then, you know, he can punch out a lot of guys. And at the end of the day, there's something to, you know, he's won 11 ball games and nobody's done that since Lou Kochaver in 05. Right. So there's obviously something to that. And when you think about it, he's been throwing game one in the SEC all year long. That's a pretty loud number.
Chris, it's been a constant talking point in the entire lead up to this thing. Tennessee's reliance on the long ball all season, the success it's had in Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and now going to Omaha, like Will said, a cavernous ballpark in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. As a guy who has played in both the Hoover Met and TD Ameritrade. You've covered games in both. Just how similar are those two ballparks? Because obviously Tennessee found plenty of success with the long ball, run rolling back-to-back games at the SEC tournament. Now they're going to try to do it in Omaha. Are we kind of overhyping that aspect of what Tennessee will look to do at the College World Series, or are they fairly similar?
They're similar in size. I think the infield in Hoover is a little quicker. Actually, dimension-wise, Hoover might actually be bigger, but it just doesn't play bigger. When it's warm in Hoover, it blows out. If you remember, the weather shifted at the end of Hoover. Remember, we got that kind of cool front that blew in, and so that's when the wind started blowing in, and the ballpark played very big there the last couple days. So from a size standpoint, it is similar to Hoover. I think that Hoover plays more offensive usually the week of the SEC tournament just because it's usually really hot that time of year, whereas the way TD Ameritrade is set up is when it's hot, the wind blows in. Like, it's set up for a south wind to blow in, and you can question the intelligence behind that, but it sure is a pretty stadium with beautiful sidelines, right? So, and there's tons of foul ground here similar to Hoover Met as well. So definitely some similarities, but I would characterize the Hoover Met on a normal day as a more offensive ballpark.
So when you say plays bigger, what exactly do you mean by that? Is that more in terms of the weather?
Wind. Okay. Just the wind. Yeah, no, not the weather, just the wind. You know, it's normally, you know, Omaha's a pretty windy place, and it's normally somewhere between 10 and 20 miles an hour in some direction at the hitter. It might not be completely blowing straight in, but it's definitely not blowing out. Whereas in Hoover, when it's warm, usually the wind is at your back as a hitter.
So, Chris, this Arizona-Vanderbilt matchup fascinates me. Arizona has four guys hitting above 464 in the postseason this year. You know, obviously, we know about Kumar Rocker and about Jack Leiter and Vanderbilt's pitching success. Is Arizona the hottest lineup in college baseball right now heading into Omaha?
Oh, I would agree with that. Yeah. And they got some competition. I mean, Stanford scored 60 runs in six games. But the run that Arizona's on is right there with Stanford or Tennessee or even when you look at what Notre Dame was able to do, albeit in a loss, they put up some crazy numbers to this point. But Arizona's playing as well as anybody in the country offensively. They pitch well enough. They don't wow you. Maybe like Vanderbilt does on the mound, but I mean, you're talking about a team that has a sub 4.5 ERA, so in a very offensive ballpark, so they can pitch. And you know, I'd be surprised if we don't see Kumar Rocker's A effort. And my guess is it could very well look similar to what Vanderbilt fans saw in the Nashville Super Regional. You know, some 2-0, 1-0, 3-1. Wouldn't surprise me at all if it's that kind of ball game.
Chris, does Vanderbilt have the pitching depth to make the run of the championship series through more of a tournament style format? Because I feel like once they get to a championship series, they obviously set up the best for that with the 1-2 punch they have on the mound. But do you think this team has the 3 and the 4 and the bullpen to get them to that point in Omaha?
Well, you don't necessarily need them. You know, if Kumar wins game one tomorrow night, then you play again Monday night, and if Jack wins game two, you don't play again until Friday, and at that point you probably pitch Christian Little, but you could run Kumar back on Friday after pitching Saturday if you chose. The problem with that is then he would be unavailable for the championship series. So my guess is the way Tim Corbin will play it is they'll run Kumar and Jack out there games 1 and 2, and if they're 2-0, Christian Little will get a chance to pitch them to the championship series. So you know, Omaha is the place where you need the least amount of pitching because of all the built-in off days. Mm. So really, and they've made it look pretty easy, but the hard work's behind them from a standpoint of really getting taxed. Now, look, if you lose game one, you still get an off day, but if you lose game one, then, yeah, you're going to start to see some arms that maybe you haven't seen yet to this point. But I put Christian Little, certainly he hasn't done as much as Jack and Kumar, but he's every bit as talented. And so, you know, I think Vanderbilt, and then they, you know, of course they got the bullpen pieces with Maldonado and Murphy, and they can run Riley out there, McElvain. Like, they have plenty of pieces in the bullpen as well. So I think Vanderbilt's just fine from a pitching standpoint.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've been wondering, is ESPN college baseball analyst Chris Burke joins us from Omaha. After Leiter and Rocker, does it feel like that much of a drop-off because they're not that deep, or is it just because Leiter and Rocker are just that good?
Well, I think it probably the latter there, right? Just the star power that those two have makes it feel like everybody else is a drop-off. But the reality is Vanderbilt has as many talented arms as anybody in the country. Again, maybe it's inconsistent, maybe still developing. But Christian Little, I mean, he's answered some big moments. He was fantastic against Louisville in the midweek in May. He was lights out at Hoover. Like, Christian Little's ready. So it wouldn't shock me if he doesn't kind of become a big name here at some point during the College World Series.
Chris, are Tennessee and Vanderbilt the two best teams in Omaha?
You can make that case. I mean, look, you know, they're the 3-4 national seed, so that's not going on too big of a limb to say that, right? But yeah, I mean, it would not be an upset. I think Vegas has them in the top three as well from a betting standpoint. So they've got as good a shot as anybody. Texas is really, really good, and I would say that the, you know, from the SEC perspective, maybe the teams that the fans don't know as much about, are very scary. Like, Arizona and Stanford are really, really talented. And Virginia and NC State have this kind of, they've been playing with their backs against the wall for the last 6 weeks. So they're scary outs. And then Mississippi State, of course, is, you know, super talented on the mound. And Texas, every bit as talented as Tennessee and Vanderbilt. So I don't look at this field and think of any of them as Cinderellas.
Chris, last thing for me, Blade Tidwell is a guy who I know has really burst on the scene this season as a freshman. Of course, a draft-eligible sophomore next year, so it won't be a lot of time of him wearing orange and white. But what has changed for him over the course of this season as you've seen him kind of grow into this role and now grow into Tennessee's number two pitcher behind Chad Dallas?
Yeah, I think he just had to get his feet wet and make his way through the gamut of the SEC, and it looked like he had hit a wall there in the middle, but boy, he finished really, really strong. And there's some athleticism there that you think, oh, big, tall, power arm righty, but man, he can land a breaking ball, a couple different shapes of the breaking ball, and he thinks he belongs. And so that's another guy that you could circle along with Christian Little that could have a coming out party this week.
With the matchups we have tomorrow and Sunday, what would be the biggest upset of the College World Series this weekend?
I don't know. Again, like I said, I don't think there's any Cinderellas. I mean, Andrew Abbott's Virginia's unquestioned ace, and they're throwing in game one against Tennessee. So If Andrew Abbott beat Tennessee, nobody would be shocked, right? If Will Bednar went out there and beat Texas, I don't think anybody would be shocked. If Arizona's offense is able to produce enough to beat Colorado, I don't think anybody would be shocked. You know, NC State and Stanford, you could say, is a bit of a coin flip anyway. So I don't mean to dodge the question. I just don't see any of these games setting up as David versus Goliath.
Yeah.
So
it's going to make for a lot of good baseball, and we are looking forward to it this weekend for sure. Chris, I know you've got lots going on up in Omaha, so really appreciate you giving us a couple minutes to talk with us today. Been great.
All right, you got it.